saved, and just enough audience to where you could have some one-on-one time with the good doctor and not feel like you're in this arena of 5,000 or 10,000 people.
Yeah.
But so Melody's on the line. Give us kind of an overview and interact with Dr. Edwards here on your thoughts about the conference there, Ms. Wilkes.
Okay. Good morning, Dr. Edwards.
Good morning, Melody. How are you?
I'm good. You would have loved this conference.
Well, I'm jealous. And just for our listeners, Dr. Carolyn Leaf, and Melody can talk more about this, but basically she deals with the brain and how to get the brain and your thoughts that affect your brain function, how to get them in order so that they help keep you healthy. So it sounds like you know, for people that don't understand functional medicine or getting to the root cause of something, it might sound a little weird, but it's so cool to see what the science shows, how our thoughts affect our DNA, affect our biology. So Carolyn Leaf is one of the leading researchers in that department, but I'm anxious to hear your thoughts on it, Melody, and what you learned.
Well, so much. It's kind of like where to start, but this conference in particular was called Think and Eat Yourself Smart, so it was more geared toward your thinking and your eating, and how when we eat, we need to be mindful of your eating. And she's also a Christian, so she applies everything to a Christian standpoint, and how when you eat, you know, you need to pray, you need to be thankful for your food, you need to realize where your food comes from. And one thing that she said that kind of stuck out in my mind is, you know, everybody's kind of like, oh, organic food is so expensive. But she said, well, for those of us who can afford to buy organic food, we need to buy it, because if we start creating a higher demand for this kind of food, then it's going to lower the prices to where everybody's going to be able to eat this kind of food. And she's not in favor necessarily of a particular diet, paleo, vegan, whatever. She's more of letting, you know, you need to let the Holy Spirit guide you in your food choices. But with that being said, she also does give a practical side of it, as, you know, even organic food, she says you have to watch out for, because if you purchase organic, you know, fruit from, say, California, they still pick it before it's necessarily ripe, and they spray it with a gas so that by the time it gets to you, it still looks good. So while, therefore, it doesn't have the pesticides and all that, it's not as good as buying local. And she really emphasized, you know, go to your local farmers markets, because she says it's so amazing the way God has done it, is because the food that is produced there locally has the nutrients in it that you need to survive in that particular area, that particular environment. Like, we all know that going to get honey from apple orchard honey, it's going to have all the pollens and stuff in it that we need to help with fight allergies for right. this area, versus buying something. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Walmart is great and they have more organic stuff. The organic honey you can get from there is not the honey particular to this area.
Right.
So she was talking about that, and she was talking about, which this really shocked me, about all the waste that we have we could actually use to feed a lot of the starving in the world. Because she said, I think France has adopted now that the supermarkets can't just throw away their wasted produce that looks like, oh, you know, that banana doesn't look all that great, so we just throw it out. No, they have to go and give it to the poor in their community.
Wow.
Because all these third world countries, you know, they were doing fine, well, not fine, but when they ate their own food, they did much better than when they got the food-like products, she called it, the food-like products shipped to them from us. Then it wasn't, you know, then they started getting some of the diseases and things that we're seeing here. And probably one of the most shocking things she said that just stuck out in my brain is they are getting mothers to pull their infants 6 to 8 months off of breast milk, and they're feeding them Coke.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, what? I mean, the whole audience was just like, what? Oh, my God.
That was in Africa, right? Is that, that's right, right?
Well, yeah. I can't remember. She just said a third world country. I can't remember which. And I took so many. She had like tons of slides up, and we were just taking pictures of those. If you listen to Dr. Caroline Leaf at all, you know she talks like 90 miles a minute. So you're just having to go through.
We know someone else
office.
Like that.
Are you saying I'm talking like
no,
that?
No, I'm talking about Dr. Edwards.
Oh, no.
I'm trying to keep it to a slow West Texas draw.
Well, you're trying to write down what she's saying, and then she's already on to the next spot, and you're like, oh, my gosh, that was like fantastic. And for anybody who wants to know more about her, of course, she's got her website. I believe it's drcarolineleaf.com. You could just Google her. But what I do is I go on YouTube, and she's got a plethora of her videos and her information, and I just sit there and listen to it. I plug it into the Bluetooth in my car, and I listen to it. But she really goes deep into, you know, the mind-body connection and how most people don't think your mind and your brain are separate from each other, but they're separate from each other, and so the mind can tell the brain what to do. And she says, you know they're separate because if you're dead, the brain's not active. So you have to have the mind to activate the brain, and how those negative toxic thoughts actually, you know, activate certain cells in your body. And she talked about epigenetics, which is living, you know, above your genes, where if you have a family member that, say, has Alzheimer's or something, you don't have to activate those genes by eating the good foods, thinking the good healthy thoughts, having a good spiritual life. Which I found, you know, just very freeing, because you think, you look at your parents, and I just, one thing that always bugged me about, no offense, Dr. Edwards, but doctors, not necessarily you, but it seems like when the first thing when you go into office, what they want to know is your medical history and the history of your family. What did your aunt have? What did your long-lost aunt remove that you've never even met? Oh, well, she had breast cancer. Okay, well, then you're probably going to get it, too. You know, I always hated thinking, like, I don't even want to tell them what my family history is, because I don't want them right. to tell me I'm going to get that.
Yeah,
you know?
Genetic determinism is what that's called, and that's what we're all taught in med school, and that's really old science. Caroline Leaf, Bruce Lipton, some of these other leading researchers are showing that that's old science. It's not accurate anymore. However, that's what most doctors are still practicing under, that notion that if you have this gene, your parents had this gene, they gave it to you, you're going to express the same disease. But what we know now, for sure, undoubtedly, the research shows 90% to maybe even 98% of all disease is more epigenetic influence than, like Melody mentioned, above the genes. So there's all these things outside of your genes that influence whether a gene's going to be turned on or turned off. And this can be anything from sunshine, because sunshine creates vitamin D in your skin, and vitamin D controls 3,000 of your genes, turns them on or off. But same with all the nutrients, vitamin A, vitamin C, the B vitamins, all the hormones, thyroid, insulin, your stress hormone, cortisol, all these different things are outside your genes. Basically, they're your environment. They're influenced by your thoughts, by your diet, by your activity, by your stress level, by your sleep patterns. All these things that are under your control is what turns genes on and off. So that's epigenetics, and that's what's so cool, is that you don't have, just because your mom had the BRCA gene for breast cancer and you have that gene, what the science shows is you can keep the gene turned off. And so, and that's what Caroline Leaf talks about so much, not only through diet, but the thoughts.
Mm-hmm. She's fascinating. I actually bought her, and it was only $30. I mean, I just think it would be great for, if you're interested in this kind of thing, to go do it. But there is a online program you can do for this Think and Eat Yourself Smart. She has other programs you can do, but the one I did was this one in particular. And it's a 21-day program, but I think you actually are supposed to do it for 63 days to actually get that to become a habit. But it's like 7 minutes a day, and it's going to show you how to think about your food. And so I'm like really excited to get that done, and get, it's just a little something every day that you can do to think about your thinking. Because you said one thing that makes us so unique is that we can actually have the ability to, like, stand outside of ourselves, so to speak, and think about our thoughts, analyze our thoughts, and in that respect, we're able to change them. Because there's a lot of times I'll be like, oh, I'm feeling sad and depressed. I'm like, okay, why am I sad and depressed? Well, I've been worrying about such and such. I'm like, okay, well, I need to change that. But
right. Well, and that's the thing with what she's shown and what I've read in her book. She talks so much about how a thought can change the structure of neurons in the brain. We used to think that the brain, you know, it was formed and it was a static, constant thing that was just there. It's not going to change. And what she shows is that these neurons are constantly changing and reorganizing and regrowing and dying and new ones growing. But you can affect the growth of those neurons by your thoughts. So when you control those thoughts, you take captive your thoughts, you do programs like her program to think certain thoughts for a repetitive period of time, basically you're regrowing and retraining these neurons and therefore changing your brain. So the fact that the brain is actually changing moment by moment and that thoughts and choices influence the changing of your brain and the growth of your brain, and I mean, it's incredible. And she also talks about in her book how, you know, you can't necessarily change the circumstances in your life, and we've talked about this before. You know, those stressful moments are going to come. You're going to get the bad news, or, you know, someone, you know, a disagreement with in a relationship or whatever it is, financial difficulties. These circumstances you don't always have control over, but your reaction to those circumstances, and that's what can really influence the brain, is your thoughts and your reaction. So just like you said, if you're sad or depressed, well, you think about why is that, and well, it's because you're worrying about this thing. Well, you know, you just go upstream on that thought. And where it always leads me is back to a spiritual perspective. You know, understanding you have a Father who's your provision and your protection, and you don't need to worry about these things. So, and that's why I love Carolyn Leaf so much. She goes back to a biblical standard and looks at, you know, why are we having these thoughts and what should we be thinking? And there's so many verses in the Bible that talk about controlling your thoughts and thinking only on the good things and the pure things and et cetera.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's also interesting that, you know, of course, what was also talked about is, you know, people think it's a bunch of hooey when they hear, oh, you know, if I have automatic negative thoughts, or what we call the ants, automatic negative thoughts that bounce around in our head, and we do it all the time, and we kind of, it starts to play on us and cause stress and anxiety and in some cases depression. And how to deal with the automatic negative thoughts, which I find fascinating, is through your diet, nutrition, and your positive thinking is so powerful. I find that just absolutely fascinating, because most people wouldn't, you know, most people who have that going on, which is a lot of us, would think, oh, just because I hear that all the time, positive thinking, I'm going to feel so much better now. But there is a lot to that.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's what's, again, really cool about what Carolyn Leaf is doing, is the research is showing this. Not that science has to prove every single thing, but it's neat when it does, especially from a doctor's standpoint. We kind of like to see proof. And I was just reading a quote. I had some quotes here from her book. 75% to 98% of mental, physical, and behavioral illness comes from one's thought life. That's from a Harvard Medical School Mind-Body Institute study. So it's incredible how the DNA can actually change shape based on your thoughts. So pretty kind of radical statements we're making here if you're coming at it from a purely old-school conventional medicine mindset. But when you're looking at things outside the box, which I think we need to do since our conventional medical model is totally failing us, which we can get into later.
Yeah.
We've got to look at something different. When you have failure rates like we have across the board, I mean, every disease process we know of basically is skyrocketing, whether it's autism or cancer, diabetes or obesity or whatever, infant mortality, death rates, I mean, you name it, horrible outcomes that are worse every year. So you wouldn't put up with that from your mechanic, your financial advisor, or your school that your kids are in. I mean, the statistics getting worse every year. No, you're not going to put up with that anywhere. Definitely a private business wouldn't put up with that. So it's time to take a hard look at our medical system. And that's why I love these people like Carolyn Leaf who are taking
this outside
the box.
You should have gone
with us.
Yeah. I never see, actually, there were several doctors in the audience. And she had a whole row of doctors on the front that she's going to be starting to do some work with. So I was like, one was an endocrinologist, and I can't remember what the other ones were. But and she's going to be starting a new TV show where she's going to be having a lot from these doctors on. And I don't know. I just find it all very exciting. But another thing she was talking about, which kind of convicted me a little bit, was supplements. Mm-hmm. And she's not a big supplement person, because she said supplements are still very processed. She yep. said you need to get what you need from nutrient-wise from your food. And, of course, if you're eating healthy, that's good. I understand not all of us choose to do that. But she had mentioned, like, the vitamin C supplement can get, I'm looking at my notes here, decontextualized. I don't know mm-hmm. if I'm saying that right.
Yep.
And too much of it can actually be carcinogenic. And I was like, what?
Yep.
Vitamin C?
Yep.
I was like,
well, I mean,
oh,
vitamin
God.
C is actually a component of multiple different bioflavonoids, and they're all combined in the food, so it's hard to just extract that. You know, ascorbic acid is synthetic, and it's what's in most multivitamins that say vitamin C. And it's hard for the body to process these synthetic things. It's the same as folic acid. Folic acid's not found in food. Folate, methylfolate in particular, is found. So synthetic folic acid, your body's got to do a lot of things to change that into the natural form called folate. And that the many, many steps the body has to go through are very energy dependent. Lots of other cofactors have to be involved, and a lot of people just can't do it. So they get stacked up with all this folic acid in their body, and it turns into what's called unmetabolized or non-metabolized folic acid. And that, too, is very harmful to the cell, just like that vitamin C that she was talking about. So I agree 100%. The food is where it's at. There's all the different synergistic effects of the phytochemicals, the other chemicals in the food that aren't vitamins. They work together in synergy with the vitamins. So I'm right with her on that. Get it from your food.
Yeah, we need to find us a good, I'm sure they're out there, I just don't know about them, here in Lubbock, some good local farmers that we can go buy our fruits and vegetables from. Of course, she suggested, of course, growing your own.
Yeah, well, there are a couple good farmers markets that have cropped up over the past year or two. Dr. Justin Anderson's an ophthalmologist in town who's really believes in eating real food, kind of a low-carb type of diet. And we may get him on soon to talk because he's kind of in charge of the downtown farmers market here in Lubbock.
Yeah, that's a real good place to go.
Oh, really?
And he would have
yeah.
resources and know who to talk to on these farmers, because I was amazed when I went to the farmers market how there's so many different little local farms I never even heard of to know how to find out they were even here. But you go there and you get their card.
Get them on the show.
Yeah, so there are resources. There needs to be a whole lot more. But local grown, I mean, I was in Fredericksburg this weekend, got some homegrown tomatoes, and it reminded me again, a homegrown, vine-ripened tomato. You slice into that, it's so juicy,
oh, yeah.
so red, so flavorful, it doesn't even compare to a store-bought.
No.
And it's because of being vine-ripened and being grown in an organic soil that has minerals in it. If a soil doesn't have minerals, you're not going to get the lusciousness of flavor, that deep, rich flavor. You'll get bulk, you'll get volume when you put nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium into a plant. That causes it to grow really fast and make poundage of your whatever crop or product you're making, but it doesn't have the flavor because it doesn't have all the other minerals. So,
right, and she did speak a little bit on the GMOs and was talking about, you know, how it is, which I know this is highly controversial, but that it's a dangerous science and we don't know what it's doing to the soil. And she said the main danger of GMOs is that we don't know what the main danger is. And the fact of the matter, the GMO seeds die and have to be repurchased. So then, again, who owns the food supply? Then you've got ethical questions there. And then she talked about biomimicry, which is, it says, an idea inspired by nature, so that we more are taking and observing what nature does and trying to imitate that versus in us trying to change nature.
Yeah.
She said, because God got it right. It didn't need to be changed. We just need to figure out how he did it and then, you know, try to do that. And she talked about there's some of these aquaponics where some of the plant life is grown in water. And I don't know. It was just, I'm like, there's just so much information. I don't feel like I got it all. But
yeah.
I was writing like crazy.
Well, that's good. That's awesome.
Appreciate that, yeah.
The more educated people are, and the more people that go to conferences like this, the better to spread the word.
Well, I think so. I think that at the end of the day, it's always good to see other physicians in there. And hopefully that we're getting close to, I don't think we've turned the corner, but hopefully we're getting to the corner where more medical professionals, MDs such as yourself, Dr. Edwards, who go, you know, there's a lot to this and we need to really take a look at it and incorporate these new found discoveries in my practice. So we'll see. I mean, I don't think it. I think we're a long way off from being it widespread throughout the United States healthcare system. But as more and more people wake up to this kind of stuff, and then they start, as she puts it, whether it's food, whether it's talking to your doctor about it, or just saying, "Hey, what do you know about this? I've heard this," or "My neighbor down the street was absolutely healed by doing this, and it wasn't through some pharmaceutical medicine. What are your thoughts?" I mean, as more and more of that happens, I think we're on the verge of a revolution in our healthcare industry. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, for sure. And it boils down to that personal testimony. I mean, that's what got me to start thinking differently out of my conventional medicine box. When you have a patient sitting in front of you who was on 13 pills for diabetes, high cholesterol, reflux, high blood pressure, and they're off of all those meds, and their A1C, which is your blood sugar average, is totally normal, off their medications, off their insulin, and you see that enough, you have to start thinking, or at least asking the question, what are you doing? Was this a fluke? But then you see another one, then another one, then another one, and you realize, no, there is something to this. So
yeah.
Unfortunately,
well, I tell you what gets hard is once you start learning about all this stuff, and you're in the grocery store, you're in the restaurant or whatever, it's really hard to make that choice to, like, oh, God, I know it. I mean, we were in Market Street yesterday, and Emma wanted mayonnaise. So I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, Emma, I'm looking at all the mayonnaise. And she's like, Mom, don't read it. Just get it. And it was, like, the Hellman's mayonnaise, and it had, like, canola oil and soybean oil. And just put it in my cart, and I'm like, I can't do it, Emma, I can't do it. I put it back, she's like, Mom, and well, we go out to eat, and she's like, can we have some wheat or yeast or something? Like, you want wheat and yeast? That's what you want from the restaurant.
Well, ignorance is bliss, but once you are educated, once you know what that does to your cells, once you know that's toxic, I mean, it's just like going out and drinking antifreeze. No one's going to do that because you know it's toxic to you. And once you have the knowledge that that stuff is toxic, what soybean oil and canola oil do to your cell membrane, I mean, you know, you're eating stuff that's not nutritious, and not only not nutritious, it's harmful. So it's
really
tough.
Totally takes all the fun out of it. I'll tell you that
it is hard to live in a culture, live in a world that doesn't yet fully understand all this. So you're in the world, but not of the world. That's a tough place to be.
Exactly.
Thank you for that call and that little update. We had a good time, of course, this weekend in Dallas at that conference, and you know, again, it's very eye opening, and hopefully. Well, she just hung up. I've been saying, thank you for the call, honey. Appreciate that. By the way, phone lines are open if you'd like to join in on the conversation, 745-5800. No, but it was good. I was glad to go to those conferences. I want to attend more. Yep. I mean, the more I know, the more I learn, the more I look at these kinds of things. And I'm getting up there in age now where, you know, if you're a 20 or 30-year-old out there, you may not be having any of these issues.
Right.
Because the body can overcome a lot of toxicity.
The body can. That's what's incredible. Plus, our mindset is we're looking for a direct correlation. I eat canola oil, and the next day my blood pressure goes high. We're trying to find this one-to-one correlation. That stems back from these germs. You know, you get whatever germ, and you got pneumonia. So you take an antibiotic, kills the germ, pneumonia goes away. This one-to-one correlation is what we're looking for. But in metabolic disease, chronic Western disease, there's not that one-to-one direct, I ate Hellman's mayonnaise today, and tomorrow I have a migraine headache or something like that. It's this culmination of nutrient lacking food full of all these different toxins that over time accumulate 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. So it's hard for Americans, the way we think and the way we're trained, to connect those dots.
Well, and we have that, you know, and pardon the pun, the McDonald's mentality.
Yeah.
To our health. You know, it took a long time for us to get to the point where it's wrecked. And then once it's wrecked, then we want to come in and see somebody like you and say, doctor, fix me today.
Yeah, I want to feel better tomorrow and put it in a pill because I got to keep living, eating, and stressing and not sleeping the way I am because I don't have time to change my diet and lifestyle.
And that's a problem.
It's a huge problem. That's why our healthcare system is failing, and we're spending so much money on it to get horrible results. The worst in all the industrialized countries, we're the worst. Our disease rates are the worst. Our death rates are the highest. I mean, it's just incomprehensible that we're putting up with this. But
okay, quick call. We're going to go to a break, but we'll take the quick call and then go to the break. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Great show. I love Caroline Lee. But one of my favorite foods in all the world is rainbow trout, scrambled eggs and sliced tomatoes.
Nice.
That's Gopher Springs, Colorado.
Amen. Bring me some next time.
Yeah, right.
Oh, well, y'all can't bring me some.
Well, I've got the tomatoes.
The show is a thrill to hear what y'all are doing. I wish we could have all joined a big, big West Texas thing 50 years ago, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Of learning how to do better in our world. Y'all have a good day.
Thank you so much.
Really enjoy it.
Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Quick break. We're coming right back. What do you want to get into on the other side of the break here, Dr. Edwards?
I think I'd like to talk a little bit about how cancer rates have not, how they've gone up since the war on cancer was started 25, 30 years ago.
And billions of dollars spent in research and development of new things. Okay, good idea. We'll be right back. Stick around. We'll be right back with more with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, right here.
Listen to your body. It may be telling you it's missing something. When we're missing omega-3s, we can feel run down, stiff, achy, or have a hard time focusing and handling stress. Omega-3s are vastly deficient in the American food supply, and we can't achieve optimal health without them. Nordic Naturals fish oils provide a convenient way to get the omega-3s you need and deliver industry-leading purity, freshness, and taste. Visit Natural Health Market at 4414 82nd Street in the Village Shopping Center.
We're visiting with Dr. Flippin with Exodus New Beginnings, located at 3805 22nd Street, Suite 2A. Their telephone number out that way, 771-4327. You can always check out the website, exodusnb.com. Go there, check it out. Dr. Flippin, glad to have you on the show today. Tell us a little bit about supportive cancer care.
Well, basically, we just support the patient's immune system, and we do this with several different modalities. We use oxygen in the form of O3, so instead of two molecules of oxygen, we electrically force another molecule in. That's a potent anti-inflammatory. It also causes the patient to secrete tumor necrosis factor, so that helps kill the cancer cells. We also use high-dose vitamin C, which is a potent antioxidant, and also it has some anti-cancer properties. And then finally, we use high-dose vitamin B, different vitamin Bs, and those support the patient's immune system so that basically what happens is the patient's own immune system can fight the cancer a lot better.
And this is done intravenously, right?
Right.
Okay, and so the patient comes in, relaxed atmosphere, gets a full rundown of what's going to happen. Of course, there's some diagnosis that goes on in the first phase of this, but fully understanding, you know, what's going on, and then treatment takes place after that, right?
That's correct.
It's very, very interesting, and had a lot of success with this, I hear.
Yes, very, very successful. We have a patient that has stage 4 pancreatic cancer, expected to live 6 weeks, diagnosed in November, who's still going to work every day and feeling great.
Well, definitely check it out. Again, located at 3805 22nd Street, Suite 2A, right here in Lubbock with Dr. Flippin. Again, that number to call, 771-4327. Be sure to check out the website, too, exodusnb.com. Call 771-4327 today. You'll be glad you did.
At Smoothie King, wheatgrass juice is very popular with our health-conscious customers. Why is wheatgrass juice so good for you? Well, wheatgrass juice helps cleanse the body of toxins, hence the potency of just 1 ounce. Wheatgrass, ounce for ounce, has more vitamin C than oranges, more vitamin A than carrots, and a healthy dose of other vitamins, too. Wheatgrass assists in building endurance and athletic performance by supplying the cells, tissues, and muscles with extra oxygen. It's a complete protein containing all the essential amino acids. Wheatgrass has a high mineral content. Magnesium, calcium, potassium, and iron are all available when you drink wheatgrass juice. It also contains hundreds of enzymes, which assist digestion and metabolism. Studies suggest that 1 ounce of wheatgrass juice has the vitamins and minerals of 2.5 pounds of green leafy vegetables. Get by Smoothie King today on the corner of Memphis Avenue and 19th Street. For optimal health, try wheatgrass juice at Smoothie King today.
Vitamins Plus is a full-line health food store located inside Drug Emporium on the corner of 82nd and Slide Road. They have one of the largest gluten-free selections in Lubbock. If they don't have what you're looking for, then it can be special ordered for you. They are Texas-owned and operated for over 20 years. Vitamins Plus carries many locally grown and produced products in the store. Good for you groceries at great for you prices. That's Vitamins Plus, 82nd Slide Road. Come by and see us today.
Welcome back into the program. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, right here with Veritas Medical. Of course, you can always reach out to them at 771-1160, 771-1160. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. And, of course, we're going to turn our attention a little bit about this war on cancer and why the war is being lost. I find this very fascinating. But, again, along the way, if you have any questions for Dr. Edwards, feel free to give us a call. Anytime during the broadcast today, 745-5800, that's area code 806-745-5800. You can always text in your question as well at 806-745-5800 on the AM 580 text line. Okay, so the war on cancer, Dr. Edwards, you say we're losing it.
I think by any measure, okay. Yes, we'd be losing it. You know, the war on cancer was started, you know, a couple, 3 decades ago. Since then, the past 25 years, cancer rates have increased about 35%. But only, I mean, very negligible as far as the reversal of cancer, 3 to 4%, you know, treatment improvements. So overall, I mean, it's really not something, If we had a treatment, chemo, radiation, surgery, if there was some treatment that was highly effective, we would see a notable drop in cancer death rates and just cancer rates in general. And you don't see that when you look at all the graphs. It's just a steady climb year after year [S2] Right. [S1] After year after year. We're not even seeing a plateau. So it's unfortunate that we're kind of stuck in this mindset of chemo, radiation, surgery, but that's where we're at. And that's based off of, I think, the thought that cancer is a genetic disease. You have this gene. It causes this cancer cell to start growing wildly out of control. So you can just go in there and try to kill that cell with chemo or radiation, or cut it out. And that genetic cause for cancer, I think, is really, that theory is being undermined. There's a great book called Cancer, A Metabolic Disease by Thomas Seyfried. And it really opens up a whole different pathway for treatment, because if the cause of cancer is not genetic but metabolic, then that changes everything. It changes how you're going to look at that cancer cell. So basically what Dr. Seyfried talks about in his book is that all cancer cells have something in common, and that is the way that they produce energy. Normally a cell is going to take oxygen and glucose and go through what's called aerobic metabolism through the Krebs cycle and produce, I think, 32 molecules of ATP. It's a pretty efficient system. But when there's damage to the mitochondria, which is your energy-producing organelle inside your cell, and there's low oxygen environment. Dr. Otto Warburg, who won the Nobel Prize, I think, back in the 1920s, he proposed a theory 100 years ago. He showed an observation that all cancer cells are living in a low oxygen environment. And when you have that low oxygen environment, the cell, in order to survive, has to flip its metabolic pathway to a different pathway that uses anaerobic fermentation. And it's just a different way to make energy, so that cancer cell is using just a different process. It's kind of like, you know, you've got an engine that can run off diesel, or I've talked about this before, diesel or gasoline, and you flip the switch to this other system, you know, from gas to diesel. Sort of similar in the cell. It uses a different metabolic pathway to produce energy. But it's doing it in response to damage to the mitochondria. Mm-hmm. So something's damaging the mitochondria that's external, whether that be the rancid fats that we've talked about, whether that be toxins, or just anything that's going to decrease the oxygenation of the environment around that cell. So a hypoxic, meaning low oxygen environment around that cell, is going to trigger the mitochondria to flip the switch. So it really points to environmental and external factors that lead to the cell going into this survival mode that becomes a different type of cell. And that's where we see, historically, we've seen some doctors use some kind of different radical outside-the-box cancer approaches and have had success. Max Gerson comes to mind. He was a doctor in Nazi Germany in the 40s. He happened upon this treatment that reversed cancer. He was actually looking for a cure for, or a treatment for his headaches, migraine headaches. Tried lots of different things. I think actually it was his wife who had headaches. Tried lots of different things and for some reason started doing a dietary thing, juicing, where he would juice a lot of carrots and green apples and greens. Long story short, the migraines went away. So the neighbors down the street who also had migraines started doing the same protocol, and their migraines went away, and it just kind of spread by word of mouth. But then word got back to Dr. Gerson that a patient that had, I think it was cutaneous tuberculosis, the tuberculosis went away at the same time. They were treating the headache, but they happened to have resolution of this other disease too. So that got him thinking, wow, maybe there's something to this for other diseases. And long story short, years down the road, people with different cancers were coming back cancer-free. And about that time, the World War II was hot and heavy, and Dr. Gerson moved to New York to avoid the Nazi persecution. So in New York, he continued his work with his protocol, which included juicing, pancreatic enzymes, and some coffee enemas for detoxification and a few other things. But juicing was a big thing. And he started getting a reputation for having reversals of cancer, even in patients that had been dismissed from Johns Hopkins. So he published a book, I believe in 1948, where he outlined 50 different cases. He presented x-rays, laboratory findings, medical records from the conventional hospitals, pathology reports, etc. So a pretty convincing book, a really interesting read when you look at his work. And he was actually called to testify in front of Congress. I think this was the subcommittee of the U.S. Senate for Foreign Relations in 1948, July 1st, 2nd, 3rd, I believe. It's in the front page of his book. He talks about testifying in front of Congress, where he brought 10 patients with him who had a cancer diagnosis in the past and now did not have that diagnosis. So that was the very first thing that I ever read that opened my eyes to, wow, maybe if you change the environment internally, then the body can do what it wants to do, which is heal itself. These cells could flip back to what they want to flip back to, which is normal metabolism. So really, really interesting historical reads. And there's been many since then that you can read about, including Dr. Thomas Seyfried with his theories on metabolic origins of cancer.
But why would you think, though, and if I could ask a question, if that was that back in 1948, why is it that it's taken this long to figure out that maybe there's something to that? Why is it that that research or that, you know, hey, that light bulb goes off, hey, there's something, and being repressed? I mean, I could see where, look, there's a lot of things, I believe, in modern medicine right now that are being shoveled to the corner because Big Pharma doesn't want it to get out, or they can't patent it and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But 1948, I mean, why? You see what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of thoughts out there as to why. I think probably most of it does go back to money. And part of it goes back to this thought process of one pill for one symptom or one disease. You know, back to the antibiotics and disease, the infectious disease mindset. I've got this infection, this bacteria. If I go in with this one pill, it'll kill that bacteria, and then I'll be cured. So that thought process, that there's this one cause and there's a one pill kind of cure, got people thinking, hey, let's invest our time and energy and money and resources into finding different pills, different chemicals that will fix a problem. And it just hadn't worked. I mean, it doesn't work for chronic disease. I mean, you can manage disease, but it doesn't reverse it because that's not the issue. I mean, you're never deficient. Your body's never lacking any pharmaceutical, so that can't be the cure. But once you get down that track of putting all your money and resources and thoughts into this one pill for one symptom, I think that's just where you end up. But then, of course, the money plays in. I mean, most of the research dollars, I think, come from some of these big companies, corporate-type companies and drug companies. And when you're a researcher at a university, I mean, your life depends on grant money. And you can get grant money from the government, but a lot of it does come from these private corporations. And, you know, if you're a private corporation, you've got to make the money. So a lot of it does
come back to money. You want to have a technology patent on a particular pill that says, you take this pill and I'll blunt the spread of the cancer. May not cure you, but you can at least live another 10 years right. symptom-free, but it's eventually going to get you anyway.
Yeah, and now we're so far down that road, and there's so much money in it, and the training of the doctors is such that we don't even think outside the box at all. It's just really hard to get people to wrap their mind around the fact there could be a different way to approach this. But again, the statistics bear out that we're not winning. We're not even really making a dent in cancer, you know, treatment-wise. Prevention's for sure the key.
Yeah, well, what about genetic therapy, though? I mean, isn't there some surprising elements to that? Because it gets controversial when you start talking about, you know, stem cell research and that kind of stuff.
Well, going back to genes, I think really when you look at it, nothing's really bearing fruit there. I mean, definitely genes play a part, but what's turning that gene on? And that's what these doctors are showing. It's the environment that turns a gene on, the oncogenes we call them. All these genes are related to metabolism. So when you get that metabolism switch because of your low oxygen environment, it turns all those genes on for the cell to survive. And that's what Dean Ornish showed when he reversed prostate cancer. He turned the cancer grow gene off and the cancer suppressor gene got turned on. Well, how did he do that? Well, he changed the environment that the cell was sitting in through nutrition and through stress management. So these genes do play a part, but they're a downstream effect. What caused that gene to come on, and it goes back to environmental stuff.
And do we all have these genes, Dr. Edwards? I mean, all have cancer genes that are dormant?
Right, yeah, of some sort or another. I mean, there are certain genes we don't all have, but we all have some sort of gene, these oncogenes we call them, that, yeah, basically lay dormant depending on your nutritional status and the external environment. That cell, I mean, every cell sits in fluid. Our cytoplasm, the fluid, the external cellular fluid, your blood, I mean, serum, the lymphatic fluid, your body's full of fluid. Just like a petri dish that we talked about with Bruce Lipton a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, your fluid levels in your body, that's your petri dish. So these cells are going to respond to what's in the petri dish or what's in the environment. So your oxygen level, your toxin level, your nutrient level, your cell's just going to, you know, respond to that. So if you're, say, prostate cells are sitting in a fluid that is toxic from, you know, whether that's germ toxins from a lot of candida overgrowth, it produces mycotoxins, 78 different mycotoxins from one candida cell, or whether it's from toxins from your environment, toxins from your food, whatever. I mean, it's a toxic environment. It decreases the oxygen level. Once the oxygen levels decrease, you know, more germs overgrow, more metabolic derangement occurs. So it all comes down to the environment. When it comes to genetic therapies for cancer, I think that we'll see, we always see the headlines, ooh, new miracle cure right around the corner, and it never pans out. Even in the genetic realm, it doesn't pan out. And it's because even if you can target a certain gene, again, that's a downstream consequence. You're still not upstream far enough working on the environment. And these guys that have historically shown reversals of cancer without using a conventional therapy, it's typically an environmental, you know, influence of some sort. Dr. Brzezinski down in Houston, very, very controversial topic because the Texas Medical Board has analyzed and looked at Dr. Brzezinski's clinic. The FDA even has looked at what he's doing down in Houston. I think he's gone to court, I don't know, 20-plus times trying to defend his license. And basically, from what I've read, Dr. Brzezinski, who's a doctor from Poland who immigrated here to America, discovered there was a particular molecule that cancer-free patients, patients that don't have cancer, are producing. It's called an anti-neoplastin molecule. And the patients that do have cancer did not have these anti-neoplastins. So basically, he collected anti-neoplastins from healthy people and administered them to a cancer's patient, and the cancer's resolved in many of the patients. Not all of them, but I think like glioblastoma, he decided to go after the absolute toughest cancer, which arguably is glioblastoma. It's a brain cancer. Most people die within a year. I mean, death rates are, I think, pretty much 100%. In the conventional literature, when I went to look, and Brzezinski talks about it too, I think there's zero long-term, more than a 12-month survival for glioblastoma with conventional therapies of chemo, radiation, or surgery. So basically, it's never been cured. And then all of a sudden, Dr. Brzezinski's got one patient that got cured. Now a bunch didn't. A bunch of patients died, but one got cured. Now it's kind of eye-opening. Then a second, then a third, then a fifth, and I think the last count was like 180. And still conventional medicine's at zero. So, and I think probably it's a 30 or 40%, or maybe it could be less. Don't quote me on the numbers. What I'm saying is not everybody reverses their cancer with his therapy, but it sure is interesting to note that he made this discovery, and it appears to work. I mean, his patients testified in front of Congress. You can read all this in his book.
But why was he thrown in court, though? Is it because, again, that the fix is in?
I'm not sure the exact...
he's violating his Hippocratic Oath?
I don't know the law that they brought against him. It's something that's probably non-standard of care type of
law.
Yeah,
that sounds to be like what would
happen. I haven't read the lawyer verbiage on what got him into court. I think he's won every case, I believe, though. And according to the documentaries in his book that I've read, at the same time that he's using these naturally occurring anti-neoplastins, there's a company trying to produce a synthetic form of the very same thing and get FDA approval for that. So,
right.
I mean, it's cool to see the science and how it works, and all right, let's get on board and let's back this guy, and whether it's synthetic or natural, make a man-made version of it, that's fine. I mean, I'm for anything that's going to help cancer patients defeat their cancer, but... things like that, stories like that you read just automatically start to bring in doubts into your mind of, well, what's going on here? And is there really this monopoly on cancer therapy? Why can't we think more outside the box? Why don't we have more of an open mind? I mean, yeah, I know it sounds...
I think it's because of the cancer. You know, CBS News did that big story. I don't know if you saw it. It was maybe a month ago or so on 60 Minutes or whatever. And they were talking about the fix is in on these cancer treatment drugs. I mean, $10,000 a whack,
yeah.
And, all this kind of stuff, and just breaking the bank on people.
And I think it's 2.3%. This was a study out of Australia. 2.3% of the patients had benefit from chemotherapy. All across the board, all cancer patients. Long-term survival, it's like, that had any effect from the chemo was 2.3%. Spending millions and trillions of dollars on this stuff, and it just isn't that effective.
Mm-mm.
So that's my whole issue. If it's not that effective, then let's think, especially after 25, 30 years, let's take a different approach, take a different look. And anyone who's trying to take a different look kind of gets ridiculed or ostracized or taken to court or, something. So I don't know. I mean, it's a very controversial, just me even talking about this is probably a red flag. My attorney would probably tell me to watch what I say, but all I'm doing is talking about the published studies from these other doctors and what they've written about in their books and their experiences and what they've testified in front of Congress with. So, I mean, I think I'm safe here. My medical license, state of Texas, and I think most other states only recognize three therapies for cancer, which is chemo, radiation, and surgery. So that is a standard of care. I always recommend patients go talk to the oncologist about the standard of care. But also encourage them to look at the statistics and then make an open-minded decision and think about adjuvant therapy or therapies you do alongside your conventional therapy that may be of benefit to your immune system, benefit to your overall health, because it's my opinion that the immune system, I think it's not only my opinion, the science shows the immune system is what actually is going to cure cancer. I mean, you may get the levels of cancer cells down low enough through chemo, radiation, surgery, but ultimately it's the immune system that has to come in and whack off those final circulating tumor cells, circulating stem cells. I mean, chemotherapy doesn't kill the stem cell of cancer stem cells. So that immune system's got to be strong, and that's why I think these native or natural immune therapies, immune-boosting therapies like Dr. Gerson was doing, are so effective, because it's your native natural intelligence that God put into the body to kill cancer is able to be unleashed and supported when you do some of these, quote-unquote simple natural things. Dr. Lorraine Day, I think I've mentioned her before, orthopedic trauma surgeon, University of San Francisco, or maybe UC Davis, one of the UC systems. She was head of the trauma surgery department, had breast cancer, still alive today, 25, 30 years later, this is back in the 80s. And she... kind of like Gerson, she used a more natural therapy, and she talks about it in her book and in her DVDs about her battle with cancer. So that's all I'm asking for, is a more open-minded approach, and let's admit that the track we're on isn't very effective. And a lot of the research is going to immunotherapy, getting your own immune system to be strengthened to go after those cancer cells. So,
all right.
Yeah, I mean, we could go into a lot more depth probably, but...
Brennan, I tell you, though, that's interesting to me, because so many people, when they get the word of, hey, you've been diagnosed with the big C, it's a life-changing event, you know, and there's so many people that are looking at ways to, you know, to defeat this, and you see a lot of that. You see a lot of it on social media all over the place. But
yeah. Well, and one thing I for sure want to talk about this real quick, is there's a book out there called Cancer Free, Are You Sure? It's written by a nurse, Jenny Harbakic. Her last name is spelled a little different, but just Google Cancer Free, Are You Sure? She's an RN, and she talks about these different cancer tests that are available that most oncologists aren't doing, but you can do them through a functional medicine clinic. And we do these all the time, and we see them come back positive all the time after a cancer patient's been treated with conventional therapy. And as far as PET scans, mammograms, or blood tests go, they appear to be cancer free. But there's some more sensitive tests that can find these circulating stem cells and circulating tumor cells. And those tests are extremely useful for these patients to really see if they're cancer-free or not. And we routinely find that these tests will be positive, even though the patient thought they were cancer-free. So in that instance, we're able to encourage the patient. They get real motivated to do some very, very healthy lifestyle and dietary changes, because at that point, there's no further things oncologists would have to offer, because there's no identifiable tumor on the PET scan. So the patient would not fit into any particular protocol with conventional standards of care. So kind of their only option is to either sit around and wait for the cancer to reemerge 5 years later, or to get real motivated to do some things that it boosts their native immunity, boosts their native defenses, basically. So it's a great book, Cancer, Are You Free? And she talks about all these various tests, because I see this all the time. You know, patients diagnosed with cancer, they go through their therapies, and they're told they're in remission or they're cancer-free, and then 5 years later, 6 years later, 7 years later, oh, the cancer's back, or there's a new secondary cancer that was potentially from the radiation chemo, which are both carcinogenic and cause cancer. So just a better surveillance post-cancer is what I'm advocating here, and her book kind of explains that further. So all you cancer survivors, go out there, read her book, and then consider these cancer monitoring tests or screening tests.
Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, everybody. Again, Veritas Medical, of course, integrative holistic medicine family practitioner. Thank you, Dr. Edwards. We look forward to seeing you back here next week on the show.
You bet.
Check out the website, veritasmedical.com, or you can call the practice directly at 771-1160. That's 806.